Now, News Talk Radio CJAD 800 presents the CEO Series, insights from top business leaders. Your host is Carl Moore.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada's, indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. Some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, former international president of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors and author of Back to Beer and Hockey, the story of Eric Molson, and numerous other hats as well. Thank you, Helen, for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Carl, for having me.
Can you tell us about your early years? Where did you grow up?
I grew up, I'm a native Montrealer. I am the daughter of Greek immigrants who came here in the early 60s as young doctors, and they started practicing medicine here and raising their family here and becoming part of the community, and I was born here.
So that takes a fair bit of courage. Why did they leave Greece for Canada?
They studied medicine in Italy, both of them. And it was a an orthopedic, my father was an orthopedic surgeon, and it was an orthopedic surgeon here in Montreal who recruited him. And so he came, and then he said, hey, he called my mother and said, you know, it's the snow is not as bad as they say, so come on over. And she joined him, and they got married here, and they made Canada and Quebec and Montreal their home.
So do you speak some Greek?
I do. I'm fluent in Greek, yeah.
And French and English as well, I presume.
French and English as well, and Italian, because my parents would speak in Italian between themselves because they thought we didn't understand. But eventually, you know, it's a Latin-based language, so you get it. So there, I do have some Italian.
So how many brothers and sisters?
I have one older brother. His name is John Antonio. He's also an orthopedic surgeon. He's at the Jewish General Hospital.
So why aren't you a medical doctor, given your mom and dad and your older brother?
It's a very good question. I think for a while when I was younger, I was inspired to be a doctor. And then I think when it was time to apply, it was I thought, you know, I want to do my own thing. And in my mind, law is, you know, it affects every part of our lives. Law is something that can be, I decided to go to law school because it's something that, you know, it can be put to multiple uses and, you know, it's a great training and education. So I went to law school, became a lawyer instead of a doctor.
Helen, how long did you practice law for?
5 years. I hesitate because I'm not sure if I'm including my articling year. So 5-6 years, not long.
So what led you to leave law and go into the business world?
So I started practicing law. My first summer job in law was at a law firm in downtown Montreal called Steichman Elliott. And I summered with them. And after a while, you know, I was there, I did my articling, you know, my articling with them. And then I started there as a first year lawyer. And I must have been, you know, around 24 years old when I was already in my fourth year of practice or so. And so I thought, I can't believe I was going into the tower, the CIBC Tower, downtown Montreal, thinking, I can't believe this is it. I've already, you know, my next stage will be to become a partner in this firm, which is a great firm. But I felt, because I'd gone straight from CJEP to McGill to law firm, I thought I want to explore more. So I went back to what I was really interested in at first, which was health. And I decided to go back to school and I did a master's of public health at Harvard. And that's how I left the law.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors. And what did you do with your public health degree?
So with this public health degree, it's funny because while I was at Harvard, I started working on a project, which was a post-merger project of reorganizing, but it was a pharmaceutical company. So it was by fluke that I ended up working there. To answer your question in a short form, I didn't do much with it. I decided I went from there and then I started working in the world of management consulting. So, but it was always in health related areas, if that's one way I used it. So it was always either for some public health entities or pharmaceutical companies and that kind of thing. So that's how I used it.
As recall, you were working over in France for a few years with Capgemini and whom not?
Yes, I worked for Capgemini Ernst & Young for 5 years in France. And it was always in, again, strategy, organizational effectiveness or restructurings post-merger, you know, sort of rebuilding the structures after mergers, because some of the big pharmaceuticals were merging in those years. So that's the kind of work I was doing, which is fascinating.
So what brought you back home to Canada?
Family. You know, at the end of the day, I was in Paris and I was working there, and my work was going very well. My father became ill, and my parents, having been, you know, they don't have extended family in Montreal or in Canada. Everyone is back in Europe. And I decided that it was time for me to come home and help out. So I did. My father wasn't well, and so I came back to help out.
Clearly, you're a leader now in terms of what you do. When did you first see yourself as a leader? Was it back in high school or cégep or later on in life?
It's funny when we get our first leadership experiences. I think they come early if we're lucky, in the sense that, you know, our schools sometimes give us positions of responsibility. And I think one of my first leadership positions, maybe, we were back at school when I was a school prefect, and I was, you know, working on the student council and helping organize things around the school life. So I think that probably was one of the first times that I, you know, got to lead a team and to work with a team and to see how collectively we can sometimes achieve much more than individually.
So are you somewhat born a leader, or do you become a leader, or is it some combination thereof?
I think it probably is a combination, and also a combination of the skills you're born with, what you learn, and the opportunities you're presented with in life. So I think it's a combination of all that.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, Chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors. What were the three most valuable lessons you learned as a management consultant?
I think the first lesson is the importance of staying curious and staying humble. It's very easy when you are part of a group of professionals who thinks they've read all the books on management consulting and all the management books and all the, you know, the theory stuff to think, oh, I understand this problem, I can have a quick design for it. But never underestimate the people who have been, who are working there, who have been inside the organization, and never underestimate the inertia that leaders can experience in trying to bring about change. Just because something makes sense intellectually, I don't think you'll get automatic buy-in. I don't think it's as easy for implementation. So I think, you know, drafting, having a beautiful plan is one thing, but it's a lot harder to put it in place. So that's the first thing. I think another thing I learned is probably, you know, when dealing with a problem, sometimes it's easier to sort of start at the end and work backwards. You know, you start by you produce a hypothesis of what solution you want that might work, and then you work backwards. Then you ask yourself, you know, what do I need to study? What do I need to prove in order to support this conclusion? And sometimes, of course, your hypothesis might be wrong, but by doing it this way, you may save yourself some of the upfront panic and wasted time. And finally, I think the third thing is be flexible. A project focus and direction can change pretty fast, and so can the leaders that are in your client's business. So you need to be pretty ready to, you know, shift gears and adjust and be able to adapt and be flexible and listen to what's going on. Listen carefully to what's going on. Assumptions are dangerous.
So when should big companies like Bombardier, you work there, you know, your family owns the Montreal Canadiens and Eventco, when in theory should they use management consultants?
I think management consultants are useful if you have to bring other stakeholders on board. If you're managing a board of directors and you need to try to bring a solution that they might think management is too bought into one side, it might be helpful to get a third party in to help out. Sometimes it's a question of simple bandwidth, if you need to have a third party objective, higher level overview. Sometimes it's specific, very, very specific and pointed questions that they need to have an expertise come in. So I think consultants do have the advantage of bringing in comparators and benchmarks and that kind of thing, but they're limited as well, because they don't have to deal with the inner politics and all that.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, Chair of Concordia's Board of Governors. You might be wondering, how does a McGill alumna become Chair of the Board of Governors at Concordia? That's up next. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, Chair of Concordia's Board of Governors.
You were Director of Strategy at Bombardier Aerospace.
Yes.
What a different company it is today.
Yeah.
But I guess in some ways, it's almost entirely what it is today is what the part of company you were in.
Yes, a certain portion of it, because it's a business aircraft, yeah.
When you look at it, you've been of big companies, as well as more of a startup, your own consulting firm. What's the mentality of the big corporate type to be successful and the mentality of more of an entrepreneur? How do they differ?
The big corporate type, you have the advantage of having very talented people around you. That's a big advantage, that you probably have high caliber personnel around you that you can brainstorm ideas with. And I do believe that if properly aligned on objectives, people can really be greater than the sum of their parts. The individual consultant has the advantage of having flexibility. I mean, I chose to go more the entrepreneurial route when I got into my 40s and I had my children. I thought that I needed the flexibility in order to be able to work as much as I wanted to, but still be there for my kids. It's hard to do that when you're big corporations. Sometimes they're all encompassing. Often they are. And so, but what I gained in flexibility, I feared that I would lose in terms of network and growth opportunities and stimulating conversations that can keep pushing your development. And so I was forced to actually go, it pushed me to build other kinds of networks, you know, with peers and keep doing my own personal development as I went along. So I found a way around it, but there you go. But the advantage, obviously, one of the advantages of being in your own as an entrepreneur is you don't have any of the, some of the bureaucracy that inevitably comes with, you know, the different strata of validating, you know, decisions and authorizations, which can become cumbersome, but necessary in bigger organizations.
You're a McGill alumni. How did you end up on the board at Concordia, the other great English university here in Quebec? How did that happen?
I was approached by my predecessor, Norm Hébert, who was the chairman before me. And he offered me the possibility of sitting as a governor. And I thought, I love everything related to education. I think Concordia, I knew a lot about Concordia just because of my husband's family, because they, although none of them went to Concordia, Eric, I think, did night school at one point there. They all, it's the values of Concordia that really appeal to the family. And so I was honored and I jumped right on.
Did you ever teach there, or does Andrew or Jeff go teach there a bit? How actively involved is the family in the business school?
Oh, no. You know, when the families, in terms of their philanthropy, is I think they have, they keep things separate. And I think it's important to keep things separate. I think when you, you make a donation and you contribute and you get, funding to contribute to the building of a school, you make sure that, the decision-making goes with the body. So in terms of them teaching there, they have been invited. I have been invited as guest lecturers from time to time, like for a class, but not as a whole course or nothing like that. So they've gone there and participated in that way. But yes, it's a great school, and we're pretty proud of it.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, Chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors.
So what does a Board of Governors do exactly?
Well, in short, it's the senior governing body of a university. But what's unique here, unlike a board of directors in a private corporation, is that it's also part of a bicameral model. So that's, which is kind of common in many universities. We have the Board of Governors, which is the senior governing body, but there's also another governing body, which is the Senate. And so the Senate is in charge of everything related to academic regulations and programs, whereas the Board of Governors is more, looks over the administrative, the legal, and the financial aspects of the university, such as, you know, adopting the university's missions and its strategic direction, approving the budget, appointing the senior administrators, tuition fees, you know, granting honorary doctorates. Oh, yeah, and of course, you know, establishing the policies and procedures and regulations in terms of governance. But it's important, this distinction between the Board of Governors and the Senate, because sometimes members of the community, like myself, aren't as familiar with that distinction. But then between these two bodies, it's a real, you know, it's a balancing act, and there needs to be effective communication between these two bodies. And the way a Board of Governors works is that it's supported by a number of committees that work with members of the university's management team. And, you know, there's committees for finance, for audit, real estate, human resources, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's the long and the short of it, I think.
So how many times does the Board get together a year? Like, how much of a time commitment is it for the average Board member of the Board of Governors?
I would say it's 8 Board meetings a year. Members are usually also involved in committees, as I mentioned. And these committees can be, or they can meet, from the Honorary Doctorate Committee meets twice a year and up to 4 times a year. And sometimes they have ad hoc meetings if something comes up. So it's pretty significant in terms of a commitment. But I have to say that I've been involved with different institutions, and I find this it's very rewarding, and it's challenging, and it's interesting. It's got all the right elements to keep you engaged.
The Board helps choose the new president when there is one, and some of the senior positions like deans and that sort of thing.
It does. All senior administrators, yeah.
I was with IBM for a dozen years before I joined Oxford and now McGill. It strikes me as that the business world and the world of academia are fairly different worlds. Was that a statement you'd agree with?
I would agree with, yes. There's differences. But besides the governance difference that I just mentioned in terms of the bicameral difference, we're not just responsible to, you know, some people view corporate boards as being responsible primarily to the shareholder, although there are some who take a much more of a stakeholder approach. But in universities, you are responsible, there's a civil responsibility, and you have multiple other stakeholders, you know. So it is different. On the Board of Governors, for example, you have constituents who come from different parts. So you do have external board members like myself who are not members of the community, but you also have people who are, you know, professors or students, alumni representative. There's different people that come there who represent different constituencies, but they have to remember once they're on the board, but they're not there to be promoting the rights of their constituency, but they're there really to work for the benefit of the university as a whole.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, Chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors. Any big projects on the board's agenda for the next couple years looking forward? Are there things that particularly come to your mind?
We're dealing with an ongoing issue, which is, of course, helping the university navigate through COVID. This is obviously an unprecedented crisis that everyone has to deal with. You know, we have to react as the pandemic unfolds, but there's also how do we steer the recovery and what does the after COVID look like? This kind of work includes working with the other universities and the other institutions, both Francophone, Anglophone, you know, all of them, for advocacy for higher education with both the provincial and the federal governments. So that, you know, what's happening with COVID has impacted us incredibly in terms of funding, fundraising. So we have to make decisions in terms of tough financial measures that we have to take in order to be able to ensure the future perennity of the organization. And we have to also, you know, think about it, the needs in terms of what are your, you know, real estate needs and landscape, like how is that evolving given what's happening? For me, one of the big things is, that I'm focused on is how do you, you know, as chair of the board, how do you really best engage the board and its governors digitally and remotely? Like what are the best practices for a virtual board? You know, how do you ensure collegiality and good governance and all that good stuff stays in place while we can't really have, you know, we can't read body language, we can't really have those connections that happen between, you know, in the breaks, all that stuff that is just the small moments that make a difference. So we have a lot to handle in the upcoming year.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of Concordia's Board of Governors. Helen has ties to some of the biggest family businesses in Canada. Up next, we'll talk about what differentiates them from other businesses. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of Concordia's Board of Governors.
So you stepped into the chair position just when it's probably one of the most unusual times of the history of the university.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I would say. But you know, every university goes through cycles and changes. I would say my predecessor, when he stepped in, Concordia was going through a transformation as well, different kind. This is a transformation. It's also an opportunity. I mean, and I do hope that this leads to innovation and greater collaboration amongst our institutions. I mean, it opens possibilities, you know, like even as we're all the institutions are grappling with what this means in terms of our budgets and our engaging students and, you know, how we're going to deal with the international students who can't come in, all this stuff that we're all dealing with. It's a time, I think, when institutions can, you know, learn from each other and work together and be collaborative. So, it's opportunity as well.
Did the experience of writing a book about your father-in-law, Eric Molson, teach you some new lessons about leadership? What were a couple things that you took away from writing that book?
I think what I took away that have changed me as a leader is Eric Molson is a very humble and low-key person who has great determination and a vision for the future. So it really taught me how you don't have to be, you know, always this double A type extroverted personality to lead effectively. If you have a vision, if you inspire others to see it and to share it with you, if you build plans, if you're patient, if you let people come to their, you know, to realize and you work that balance between, you know, your short-term needs as well as your long-term goals. If you work that balance well, you can really achieve great things. So that's something that I saw while writing the book of Eric.
When you look at family businesses, we have a lot here in Montreal. I mean, there's obviously the Molsons, there's the Saputos, there's the Baudouin Bombardier family. A lot of our big firms are family firms. How are the challenges of a family firm a bit different from that of the corporate world that you worked in?
I would venture to say that it's more complex in a sense that you are dealing with the balance of both of the family issues as well as the business issues. So that can get quite complex, especially when you're dealing with issues of, you know, meritocracy versus nepotism, when you're dealing with issues of, you know, how do you decide which ones of the next generation are going to be part of the business or not part of the business? Do people know what it is like to be a responsible owner if you don't want to be an active operator? So you're managing stakeholders that are at multiple different levels than an enterprise. An enterprise manages, you know, it has to manage its shareholders, but it also has to manage, for example, its community and its where it lives, the environment, all, you know, there's different stakeholders. But on top of this, you have the family dynamic that you have to deal with. So it complexifies the dynamic. And that's what makes it, you know, that makes it interesting, challenging, but also, very rewarding if you manage to, you know, perpetuate it and to continue it, because it becomes more than just in a family business. Often, if you want to be a multi-generational family business, if that's the path you want to take, it becomes more than just making money. It's more than that. It is more about, you know, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? What kind of contribution do you want to make to society? What kind of an employer do you want to be because it reflects the family's values? What kind of family do you want? You know, it just goes beyond it. So it is a little more complex than simply because of those aspects.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors.
One of the famous sayings about family businesses, rags to riches to rags. And what is astonishing about the Molsons, it's like 12 generations. And your husband and his brother are still in charge and great leaders in their better moments. What is in the water at the Molson household?
Beer. I don't understand the question. So my husband, Andrew, Jeff, and the third brother, Justin, are the seventh generation. I think the fundamental, it starts with values. And it's, everyone says it, I know, but it's not only knowing about the values, but living the values and having their parents give the example of the values. And if it all becomes, so it's about a commitment to something greater than your own individual, either pocketbook or, you know, ego or whatever it is. It is being committed to something, you know, greater than yourself. And that's something that Eric, Eric Molson, the boys' father, instilled, as did Jane, his wife. You know, it is, they all feel, you know, privileged. This community has given us a lot. So they keep giving back to the community as much as they can while being good stewards for the business. So I think these values have been not only taught, but exemplified. And so that's something that's really important.
In your career, you've moved to consulting, you've gone into PR, you've gone to Bombardier. Why did you move around? What did you learn and what did you get from that? And should other people consider that?
I remember when I came back from Paris to Montreal and I met my friends from Steichman Elliott, who I had done my years with. And by the time I got back after, you know, 5.5 years in Paris and my years in Boston, they had become partners and they were well into an established career. And I was still, you know, I had been a management consultant and I'd changed and I thought, God, I wish I was more like linear. So it'd be simpler. But part of me is that I've always been driven I'm curious. And I find that if there's a project that sort of lights me up and I find it interesting, I will dive in. And it's not about, oh, what end goal do I want for my career? But it's about, oh, what's the challenge now? And what could we do? And what could we take it to? So you sort of let life open doors for you and you decide to go through them as opposed to determining right away, you know, I'm here and that's where I want to go. And that's my linear path, because you might not see the other doors that open up. So that's how I did it. And, you know, I'm sure there are times in my path where people are looking at me going like, Helen, you did a master's of public health. You've done 2 law degrees and a master's of law and you're in aerospace. Like, but I never tried to sort of, it was more, you know, driven by, well, I was interested in it. I wanted to dig deep into it. And then, and it's, you know, it's funny when you look back in retrospect, you realize how all these experiences, they sort of help and contribute to the situation you find yourself. So we all have our own journey. I wouldn't say this is better than another journey. I would just say that was mine.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors. As a chair of the board, it gives you a bigger view of the world and a variety, maybe not the great depth if you'd been a partner at Steichman, but it gives you a broader view, which is a great strength at times, but occasionally a weakness.
It is, but then it's always a strength and a weakness, you know. The advantage of, as chair of Concordia, I have an incredibly, you know, we're really lucky because right now we have a president, Graham Carr, who is very talented and capable, and he's got a great team around him. So I'm not like responsible. My job is what it is around governance and running the meetings and making sure the risk management that comes with all that. But the more, you know, you surround yourself, you're not alone on this boat.
What is an excellent chair of a meeting in your experience?
It's one who listens. I think listening is really important to both the verbal and the nonverbal cues. It's one who tries to take the I out of it and tries to run the meeting so that we keep to our agenda and what we want to accomplish while allowing people to express themselves and knowing when to steer the conversation to the next topic when it's getting redundant. I think we're going to have a challenge. You know, we've done a few board meetings now by Zoom. I don't think it's simple. I think we have to rewire our brains on how that works, because seeing everyone like the Brady Bunch on my screen is not the same as being in a room with them. So that's a new skill that we have to develop, but humans, we adapt. So we'll adapt to that. So I think that's what, you know, you have to have a clear agenda. You have to stick to it, respect people's time, and allow people to speak and not be reactive. If people have a different view, it's not an attack against you. It is something that they want to present. And also, I think that part of it is also a learning and a growing that has to go with the board as it goes on. So as chair, you also have to sort of get to know your board members, keep your board members informed. There's a lot of stuff that happens outside the meeting that you're chairing.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of Concordia's Board of Governors. Up next, we'll be talking about managing work-life integration while working almost entirely via Zoom. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of Concordia's Board of Governors.
You've been working from home during COVID-19 down in the country or here in Montreal. Do you work more, or did you at least the early times work more from home than you did when you were out and about on the road?
I have to say that our children are young. They're relatively young. They're still in elementary school. And so on March 13th, when the schools closed, because I have the flexibility with my agenda to manage my own appointments, I moved everyone, all my meetings afternoon. And so from 8 in the morning until noon, I was with my children, and I was doing, whatever. I was trying to pretend I was a teacher and failing probably miserably at it and getting a whole other new respect for that, for all the work these great people do. But I had to do that. And so I felt so. And then I would start doing my coaching work and whatever else I was doing after in the afternoon and evening. And so it felt more cumbersome because of that dual role. Now the summertime came, I probably got more. Yes, you become more efficient when you have less, traveling and going back and forth and the rest of it. But you lose in the efficiency. You lose, as I said, the human thing and working, working with teams and getting the team dynamic right. Because I do coach teams as well as individuals. It's you have to adapt.
Do you think that we're going to be working much more from home after this crisis is over? That we've just see the world differently than we have in the past.
I think we are going to, we've learned that we can get things done remotely. I think that it's going to be a balancing act. It's funny how each individual reacts differently. Some people absolutely need to get into the office. I think that if you are able to have a home office, you still need to come into the office once in a while for the synergy that's created and having the brainstorming, the minds that are together, the people that are together. But do you need to be in the office from 9 to 5? In certain industries, I would probably say, that could be modified now because we've seen that it can work. If you're working on a shop floor, that's different. But if you're doing, professional services, you can probably do a balancing act between the two, remote and live. I have a friend of mine, the number of hours that she spent on planes, I see her, it's just a new lease on life that she's able to conduct these meetings and do them from her home and still be there. Some people are really, really, it's been very beneficial. And so you're going to ask yourself the question now, do we need to do so much face-to-face and what I think we still do need stuff to do stuff face-to-face.
We're speaking with Helen Antonio, chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors.
Are you more of an introvert or extrovert?
I'm someone who, so I don't know if that what this qualifies as, I'm someone who enjoys being with people and interacting and being present with people, but I'm someone who needs to recharge. When the world was the way it was previously, my husband and I, we do during the week, we were very involved in the community. We'd go to meetings and events and interact with many people. But on the weekend, it was just the family, and we needed it. I need it because I need to sort of I need to be on my own and get my head straight. So is that an introvert or an extrovert? You tell me. You're the expert.
Probably slightly more introverted, but it would take more discussion to get to the heart of that. Before this happened, did you get to go to a bunch of Canadians games?
Yes, I went to a bunch of Canadians games. Yes.
What do you love about hockey as a game? Why do you love it so much?
I'm sure if you ask the question to my brother-in-law, Jeff, and my husband, Andrew, and my brother, John Antonio, they have a whole bunch of different reasons why they love it. What I love about hockey is, for us, it's a real opportunity to be there as a family, because we actually go with Andrew's parents often to the games. And sometimes we bring our girls and we bring the kids and stuff, and it's fun. I love when we're winning, what this team does to the city. I love the unifying aspect of what it means, the Montreal Canadiens. It just unifies people. You can be in England and you can meet a friend who's from Montreal, and they're wearing a Habs sort of baseball cap. So I love that. I personally love sports that have to do with teams, and to see the collaboration, to see the role of the coach, to see how to make them work well together, to see talent and grow the talent from when you go through the recruitment. So all that stuff I love. And obviously, you start learning more about the individual players, and then, what's going on with them. And that becomes, you follow it like a soap opera. So it's kind of fun. But it's, I'm not a fan like some, like my brother and my brother-in-law and my brother-in-laws and my husband. So, but I love the sport. Don't get me wrong.
No, it's very intriguing because you're a leadership coach and you're sitting behind the coach, the assistant coaches, the captain, and watching leadership on a team that you give advice to corporate teams about. Anything strike you about hockey leadership? How it's different than, the corporate world that you and I lived in.
There was a book that was written, an early coaching book called The Inner Game of Tennis. And I forget the name of the author, but it was one of the first books of coaching that they took this book and they eventually transformed it into the inner game of skiing and the inner game of blah, blah, blah. And then it became an inner game of management consultants. And the process, this whole idea of set your goals, look at all your options, build on your strengths and your weaknesses, and put them into action. It's the same, that's what they said. So there's similarities in terms of the human development and the potential of the human development, I think. It's the content that's different.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Helen Antonio, Chair of the University of Concordia's Board of Governors. Helen, what's your passion? When did you realize it, and has it evolved?
My passion is learning and exploring. And I'm passionate about digging and learning and hearing. Frankly, I am passionate about what I do. I'm passionate about coaching. And when I say that it's about learning, I think I equate coaching to learning, because it is learning about yourself. It's for the individual who's being coached to dig further and as they say, it's peel the onion back. So I am passionate about that. I am, we all have a potential that is not fully realized. And taking steps to realize it more and more, and seeing this as a growth journey and a learning journey, is something that I find I'm passionate about watching it happen, and I try to instill that in my own life as I go forward.
How do you stay in good health physically and mentally? What do you do?
It's a balance, and I don't like that word very much because it's overused, but it really is. So I try to watch what I eat and I exercise regularly. I think in our day and age, we are bombarded with, we have lots and lots going on, a lot of open applications on our, both on our desktop and in our minds. So it's important to take time to sort of, when you're doing something, to really consciously focus on what you're doing and shut things out of the periphery out. So I try to, when I'm somewhere, to be fully there. And to shut out the distractions, which sometimes I'm okay at doing and sometimes I'm less good at doing.
What book are you reading right now?
Right now I am reading, I love this book. I'm enjoying it. It's by Jodi Picoult. She's written a number of New York Times bestsellers, but the one that I'm reading right now is called Small Great Things. And I started reading it just by a fluke. And it's so pertinent because it focuses on the issue of race. In America, it's about this African-American nurse in the neonatal ward, and she's been ordered not to touch or go near this this baby of a white supremacist couple. But what's fascinating is that she takes the perspectives of the African American nurse. She takes the perspectives of the supremacist father and mother. There's a death that happens, so she takes the perspective of the lawyer. It makes you think, because it makes you think about racism, and it makes you think about the unconscious bias that, you know, one carries around personally.
This is the CO series. The show is produced by Marie LeBrosse. We also like to thank our technical producer, Brian Calliser. Thank you for tuning into the CO series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.